Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Hello from Fuzhou, China. Katie and I just got in this morning on a train ride, and we're gonna head out to Taiwan tomorrow. Now, I wanna catch you guys up on how we got here from after the last episode that I recorded, but I wanna give our guests some time today. We took a ferry from Osaka, Japan, out to Shanghai, China, a couple days ago. And we weren't expecting this, but on the ferry, there were a couple of foreigners. Really unexpected, and almost the rest of the ferry was almost empty. Only a few passengers, so we had pretty much a run of the place. To be honest, that made it a little boring. It wasn't a big party scene or anything, but we had 2 days to just relax. And Katie and I really needed this. So we had a great time. And one of the guys on the ferry, one of the foreigners, was this guy from Belgium. And his name is Philippe Hannon. And he just finished 2 months of walking around Shikoku Island in this pilgrimage. This thing has been going on for over 1,000 years, and Katie and I found out about it as we were biking around. Well, during that whole time, Philippe was on the road, wearing his pointy hat and his white shirt and carrying his walking stick with him, walking from temple to temple. There's 88 temples on the island, and you go between each one, and you sleep sometimes in the temple, sometimes you camp. But Philippe's going to explain all of that, because we sat down on the ship and had ourselves a nice little conversation during our day at sea. So we're going to get to that in just a minute. And then after our conversation, I'm going to update you on what Katie and I have been up to. Okay, so we'll do it in that order. One last thing, though, that I want to talk about as I walk through these streets of Fuzhou near my hotel is my second book, 1,000 Days Between, Part 2. I think I'm done. It's taken me a lot longer than I thought it would and a lot longer than I hoped it would. A lot of motorcycle traffic out here, but I think it's ready now, and I just need to get a release date out, and then it'll be done, and you can read it. So, I don't know, how about we make it, how about the 8th of December, 2017, how's that sound? Let's do it. Okay, that's gonna be the release date, December 8th, 2017, look for it, 1,000 Days Between Part 2. Look for it on Amazon. I will update my website with all the information you need. Of course, the website is 1000daysbetween.com. And that gives me, 10 days maybe, to spread the word. So, thank you for your patience. I really appreciate it. This book has been years in the making. It's not perfect, but I think it's just about as good as I'm gonna get it. And I'm really proud of this. I've spent so much time and effort writing it. It's about my time in South America. Well, both of the books that I've written are about South America. The first one was my first stint. Now this one is a continuation, starting out when I came home and then ending the whole trip. So look for that soon. And right now, let's get into my conversation with Philippe Hannon. I'm really surprised at how empty the ship is.
Yeah, how many people? 20? I don't know. Maybe. Very empty.
And you could probably fit a couple hundred on here.
I think about 300, they say. And the dormitory is, I don't know, I think it's 50 or something, but I don't see how you can fit 50 people here. It must be...
Oh, it'd be so packed with that many. It's just a big open room.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, you paid for this room, right?
Yeah.
This open room?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's just the cheapest one, no?
Yeah, cheapest tickets, and then they upgraded us because it's empty.
Yeah. But I think I like it even more here than the four beds bedroom. It's good also, huh?
But you
it's
do.
Yeah. This is really nice. I mean, it's like a lot of space, and well, it gets pretty yeah, when the sun in the morning.
Oh,
and you cannot sleep so well, no, because there's a lot of light.
Ah, right.
But it's also nice, right. No, if you have, you have a nice view from your bed. If there are not many people, you just put your bed in front of the.
That's true. That's
window.
True. There's a lot of places on the ship you can just sit around and look at the ocean.
Yes.
So it is basically a cruise,
mm-hmm.
but they call it a ferry, so it's a lot
shorter. A short cruise. Yes. Yeah. That's a good thing, no? Because usually, yes. Planes are cheaper, but.
It's a little more money than a plane would be.
But yeah, you can find cheaper planes, but not much cheaper.
Not
and
much.
Then the good thing is this one is like an open ticket. No, you can change the return date.
Okay.
For free.
Yeah, it's just once a week that it goes.
Very easily. Yeah, just once a week.
If you want to stay for another week. Then
Or another month, then no problem. I think it's open 1 year. I think so.
For a whole year you can change it?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
But obviously you cannot stay for 1 year in Japan, for the visa, but.
Right. I guess you'd have to fly somewhere else.
I guess even if you decided, you could just go by ferry again to Korea and come back to Japan, and from
sure.
Japan go back to China. So
good idea.
That would be possible.
Huh. I'll have to keep that in mind for next time. If there's a boat available like this and mm-hmm. I have time, there's no way I'm flying.
Yeah, for sure. It's much more interesting.
It's more interesting. It's so much more comfortable.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yesterday, both of us went up and relaxed in the hot tub.
Yes.
Looking out over the ocean.
Mm.
Inside of the ship.
It's much, much better than plane, if you have time.
Yeah. It takes a couple days.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, I was just in Japan for a month with Katie, and we were biking around, and so we just met you. And how long were you there?
2 months.
Yeah?
2 months in Japan.
And so while Katie and I were on this island of Shikoku, we didn't know anything about Japan before we went. We didn't know the names of the islands or anything.
Yes.
So we somehow ended up on Shikoku, and we learned about this pilgrimage people do. And it turns out I met you, and you actually did this pilgrimage.
Yes, for the second time I did.
It's for the second time. Mm-hmm. Can you just tell me about it? Like, what is it in general?
This pilgrimage?
Yeah.
Well, it's a very famous monk who was born and lived there most of his life, about 1,200 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And he used to walk a lot around the island. I think he created or like restored or like many of the temples on the island. Well, the pilgrimage consists of like you just walk and go in 88 temples along the island. And all of these temples have some relation with this Buddhist master who created like a new sect of like a new school of Buddhism in Japan a long time ago now. And actually he traveled to China like at that time because he was not able to understand very well the texts that were available in Japan at the time. So he decided to go to China to have access to to the original maybe Buddhist text or the original translation from Sanskrit from India.
Oh, okay.
And he traveled to Xi'an, that was the capital at the time.
Right.
So that's a very long and I guess dangerous journey.
It must have been back then.
Just take the boat, the boat back 1,200 years ago and then walk by foot or by horse, I don't know, to Xi'an, which is very far from the from the coast.
And that's about 800 AD, so before Genghis Khan.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
Attila the Hun must have been around then, around then.
Since 1,200 years ago, people have been walking around the island. I think at the beginning it was only monks, doing some special religious training, and I don't remember exactly when it became more popular among the lay people, but a few hundred years ago.
Oh, so it still has been around a long time.
Yeah. Huh. I think another monk started to, he wrote the first guidebook kind of for the pilgrimage, and built some rest huts along the way and put some signs. I guess at the time it was a dangerous thing to do.
Hmm.
Why is that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, Japan was very peaceful at the time, no? A few hundred years ago, and there were no roads, there were no shops, maybe for long stretches of...
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Now it's very easy. Well, I mean, you have convenience stores, you have supermarkets, so every 10 kilometers or less. And
at least, yeah. There's 7-Elevens on every corner.
Yes, yes. Huh.
So convenient in Japan.
Yeah,
huh? So you spent about 2 months walking?
About 50 days.
50 days?
50 days. Yeah, they say it takes about between 40 and 50 days, depending on how much you walk every day.
Oh, okay.
And if you're a light back and you go to a hotel or guest house every night, you can walk more, no? You carry less, and then it's easy. If you carry your own tent and cooking gear, it's a little bit heavier.
And you had your own
yeah,
stuff?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Mm. So did you take any rest days or just every single day?
I took two rest days because of the bad weather, because of typhoons.
Right.
So I didn't really want to work like in the rain and the wind and 2 days.
Well, fair enough. Mm-hmm. So you basically camped every night or stayed in temples?
Most of the time I camped, and then some temples, some of the temples offer free accommodation to pilgrims. Yeah. It's quite basic, but it's more comfortable than, you sleep inside, more comfortable than camping.
Sure.
Sometimes some local people also offer accommodations to pilgrims, but it's quite rare.
Okay.
So a lot of camping, yes.
Yeah, and camping is pretty easy in Japan, huh?
It's very easy. Yeah. You can basically camp in every public park and where else? Yeah, that's what they call like Michinoeki, like road stations, places for people to stop, you know, when they're driving.
Yeah.
Not on the highway, on the national roads. And it's very convenient too, like, and you can also camp there, you know? You have like a roof.
Yeah.
You always have a shop. Of course, public toilets open 24 hours.
Yeah, the toilets even are just...
Yeah, it makes it very easy.
Yeah.
Very convenient to camp, no? You can find public toilets in so many places and clean. And
you can drink the water, too.
You can drink the water, oh, yeah. Yes. It's very convenient.
Right. Katie and I love that aspect of Japan. Mm-hmm. Just every night around, like an hour or two before dark, we'd start looking and find a campsite.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The first few nights, we were like a little bit cautious. Like,
I want to be very careful here.
Make sure no one sees me. Mm, but by the end, we were just camping underneath bright lights and
of course.
people walking by.
Yeah, I think the first few times also I was a bit cautious, but after I found out it's more comfortable. It's easier just to tell people, okay, I'm camping there. Is it okay? And they always say yes.
Yeah.
So they know you're there. They're not surprised, and they might even come and give you some food sometimes.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
Were you dressed in your pilgrim outfit?
Yes.
The whole time? I guess if they see wearing the pilgrim clothes.
Yes.
It's a little
It's even easier, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, anyway, if you walk and you have but it's easier. Like, people recognize you clearly as a pilgrim.
Uh-huh. Mm. Well, that's cool. So, but what got you interested in this in the first place?
Well, the first time I did it was 10 years ago, and it was by chance. No, I just came to Japan to see some friend, and after 2 weeks or so, I was a little bored with staying in big city.
Yeah.
And another traveler told me about this pilgrimage on Shikoku Island.
Uh-huh.
So I was interested to see, but I didn't know if I would walk all the way or just for a few days.
Yeah.
So I just started, and then I met another pilgrim who became a friend, and we walked together like for 50 days also, like all the way.
Wow.
That was the first time, and then this time I just wanted to do it again and visit these friends again.
Oh, so you met up with some people who you met the first time?
Yes. That I met on the pilgrimage.
Okay.
So yeah, I met them again in Kobe. And another friend is from Nagoya, but he came to Kobe to meet.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you must have taken the same route as us then, like go from Osaka to Kobe and then take the ferry to Takamatsu?
No, I took one of these friends like drove me to Shikoku.
Oh, I see.
And then out of Shikoku, I hitchhiked back to Kobe.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it must have been a really cheap 2 months then.
Well, yeah, walking food. Just food.
Food, yeah.
Mostly food. Some presents for friends.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you can travel cheap. Well, cheap in Japan. Mm. It's possible, no? Just not going to hotels or very rarely, mm-hmm. and not taking almost any form of public transportation. No, just hitchhiking is also quite easy.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Easy. Well, it's a bit slow sometimes, but it's yeah. It's okay.
We never tried that. Right. I think if we were to do it again, we would be a lot cheaper next time.
But yes.
Even this time, it was still quite reasonable.
Uh huh.
But what got us in trouble, but what we ran into is we were going to do a circle mm-hmm. around the south part of Honshu.
Yes.
And we just started looking at the maps when we were halfway through, and we're like, ooh, the north end is really mountainous, and that's not going to be good. Uh-huh. We don't have the best legs or the best bikes for this.
Yeah, and it's cold also, no?
And it's getting cold. Even at sea level, it's getting cold, but yes. Especially in the mountains.
Yes.
So we decided to go out to Kyushu uh-huh. and then come back. So we ended up taking one train and then one ferry overnight.
So could you put the bicycles on the train?
Yeah, in the bags.
In the bag.
As long as they're inside a bag, no one seems to care. But okay. I don't think you can just
No, you cannot. Right. Yeah, you have to pack them and...
Mm. Yeah. And everyone knew their bicycles. There's just no hiding
okay.
it.
And you don't have to pay any extra...
No fees. Extra.
Ah, okay, that's
so
good.
So that was really good.
You need a bag.
Yeah, we did have
a big bag.
Oh, yeah, a really big bag. Because most folding bikes, the wheels are small.
Yes.
They're only like 20
inches.
They're
folding, folding
ours,
bikes?
Ours, yeah, they fold in half.
Ah, okay, that's good.
But they're full size, so they're still 26-inch wheels.
Yeah.
So
because a normal bike is difficult. Well, you can put it in a bag, but that's a really big bag.
Right. What you can do is take off the front wheel.
Yes.
And
both.
Put it behind.
Yes. You can do it.
But it just takes a lot more effort then.
And yes. It's still big.
Mm. Even our bikes are still big, but at least it's quicker and a little more compact when they fold.
Yeah, and it's good to take the train or the bus.
Right. But just the one train, and then we carry them on a ferry once overnight mm-hmm. from Beppu to Osaka. And just those two things alone were like $100. So,
yes.
So that didn't necessarily kill our budget, but we could have done things a lot cheaper if we had just biked in a complete circle.
Bicycles, when you don't ride the bicycle itself, it's a bit, it's not very convenient, no? If you have to put it on the bus, on the train, on the ferry.
Right. Yeah,
if
we're
you
trying.
Just, if you just walk, it's...
Oh, yeah, I guess walking, it's you much, just get out and
it's
walk.
It's easy, yeah.
Uh-huh. We're trying to put our bicycles on as few vehicles as possible.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
not
of
that,
course.
Not that I'm completely against it, but it's just...
It's not convenient.
No, not convenient. So we're going to have to load them on a train down mm-hmm. to Fuzhou once we get to Shanghai.
But in China it's easier, no?
Yeah, we've done a couple long train rides with the bikes. No mm-hmm. one has said a word to us.
No, also as long as they're in the bag, it's okay.
Yeah, it seems okay.
Even if you have a normal bike, you just put it in a... You pay for the bicycle and they put it in a different car, no?
But
it's also, it's easy also.
Okay.
It's not expensive.
Yeah, as long as it works out. Mm-hmm. I don't really mind.
I think it's easier in China than in Japan.
Oh, okay. Huh. Yeah, it hasn't been an issue so far. Oh, except coming on this boat, they wanted to charge us extra money.
Uh-huh.
They wanted 2,000 yen per bike.
Okay.
Because they saw them in the bags. And there is it's written up in their rules, like that you have to pay more for a bike.
Yes.
But that's if it's not in a bag.
Mm.
So Katie tried different tactics with the guy. So first she said, well, last time we didn't have to pay. And they said, well, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And then she also said, these aren't bikes. These are just our luggage.
Yes.
It's the same thing as a suitcase.
Yes.
And you don't have to pay for a suitcase. Mm-hmm. And they said, we don't care. And then finally, the one that worked is she said, well, fine, but I don't have any money left because I didn't think I was going to have to pay this. So where's your credit card machine? Do you take a credit card?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, fine, just go through.
Yes. No, because this boat, this ferry is a bit I don't know why. They don't accept any credit cards, no?
Right.
You just have to pay in cash the day you get on the boat.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we bought a round trip ticket from Shanghai.
Yeah, me too.
Just because it's cheaper that way.
Yes, yeah, it is. But it's strange, no? You cannot pay. But it's, I like it also, no? You don't have to pay in advance. So you just kind of book.
Yeah.
Choose your day, the date you go and you come back, and then if something happens, you just cancel. Or you don't even cancel, you don't show up.
You just don't go. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You didn't pay anything before.
Yeah, especially this time of year. I mean, like we said, this boat is probably at 10% capacity.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
there's
almost
nobody.
But I think it's never full.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, on the way to Japan, I met a couple of Japanese people, and they really... They're like some. I also have it now, like a kind of membership card. No, you get discount after the fifth travel.
Yeah.
But they take that boat quite often, and they say it's usually half full at or less than that, which is good.
Yeah,
it makes it comfortable.
It's good. I just hope they don't cancel it.
Ah, yes.
You know, there used to be a ferry from Okinawa, I guess, to Taiwan.
Yes.
And they canceled that a few years ago.
Okay.
We were hoping to get on that one, which would be perfect for us, but it's just, for whatever reason, people aren't riding boats very much these days.
It's more expensive.
Yeah.
Mostly, I guess.
And it's slower.
It's slower. It's slower, but cheaper, people would take it more. But if it's slower and more expensive.
I think the one reason people still do take them, besides these tour groups that sometimes come through, is like the lady that we met out there.
Oh, yes.
She just has a business. She wants to carry 100 kilos worth
of
stuff.
Yes.
And on a flight, that would just be so expensive.
Oh, yeah.
You just can't do it.
You cannot, no.
So, but you can carry large amounts of stuff on a ship.
How much did she say? 160? 180 kilo? 160 kilos?
I think she said 180 kilos she had.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of
stuff.
That's
a lot, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it depends what kind of business you're doing.
I guess, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this ferry is very big. And when we got to Osaka, we watched them unload the bottom part. And it was for like an hour, just semis coming in and picking up the shipping containers, driving them out.
Uh-huh.
There's so much stuff in these things.
Yeah.
A lot of cargo.
Yeah, that's all they make money. No, it's just the cargo.
That must be.
Because the passenger is not enough.
Yeah, probably not.
So maybe it's just some extra money with the passengers. Uh-huh. I guess most of the most important part of the income is from the cargo.
Must be.
Probably. Mm.
So right now you're living in China, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And
Hangzhou, close to Shanghai.
Yeah. Did you see the news about the Americans who got arrested there?
Where?
This might not be international news, but it's huge news in the States.
I've seen something, some basketball players,
young kids. Yeah, basketball players.
Well, for shoplifting or something.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Then Trump was in China, and I think something happened, and they were allowed to leave.
Okay.
Without going to jail, and they were just stuck in their hotel for a week. Mm-hmm. So they got very lucky.
Yes, yeah. Well, because they're quite famous. And.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess, but I found it interesting that some of the news articles said, well, they were in a city near Shanghai.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And I'm like,
maybe there.
Oh,
I don't
mean
know.
they were in Hangzhou.
They were in Hangzhou.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
where they were caught shoplifting.
Like, oh, so they were in that city that's bigger than New York City. Like, you can't say the name of it.
Yeah, there are many cities like that in
China. It's just
China,
some small town near Shanghai.
Like between 5 and 10 million.
So, yeah.
And then nobody, you don't know nobody
no, you don't know
about
the name.
Them. Also, even if you live in China, I'm sure many, many big cities like that, I never heard about them.
People tell me all the time, like, oh, I'm from a really small town. It's just 3 million people.
Mm, that's a small town.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5-6 million, maybe it's a middle side.
Right.
Then over 10, that's a, you need 10 million to be a big city.
But they were in a Louis Vuitton store in the mall, and they stole sunglasses from Louis
Vuitton.
Ah,
that's where okay.
Yeah.
No, small shoplift.
No,
expensive.
Like, right. It must have been really expensive. But they act as if this is a small town where, like, with a Louis Vuitton shop. No, it's probably a big city, guys.
It is.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Okay.
So Hangzhou's on the map now.
Yes. Well, it's quite it's quite a famous city in China.
Right.
Every Chinese people know about. because of Chinese history. And it's also
Westlake is very
famous. Yeah, it's a very famous place for Chinese tourists to go.
Yeah, I just went there for a weekend, I guess.
Yeah.
Once. Went to the lake. Katie was playing frisbee.
It's quite pretty. Yeah, it's pretty. It's nice.
It was nice, yeah.
There's some nice places.
So how long have you lived there?
About 3 years.
Yeah? And you like it there?
Yeah, it depends. For me, it's too big. I don't really like to live in very big cities. But the good thing is you can very quickly go, not even outside. For example, as you say, to the Westlake or just around, close to the Westlake, you have some hills. You can go hiking a bit and like really be in nice places. Nature kind of. Yeah, you have some tea plantations. No, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. Easy to get out then?
Easy to get out. It's not even outside of the city, just at the edge. Like it's, from where I live, if there's not too much traffic, in 20 minutes by bus, I'm there.
Oh, that's good. Huh. All right. What about winters? Are those really bad?
Not very cold, but they're like cold and humid. It's rarely snowing, not every winter. Sometimes snowing. And I think anyway, the snow doesn't stay. But I don't know, I would say average, it's maybe between 5 and 10 degrees.
Oh, that's pretty warm, actually.
But it's humid, so it feels cold.
But when is that cold and there's no heat?
There's no heating system.
That is pretty
cold. So
brutal.
It's cold inside the apartment.
Yeah.
You wear like your jacket inside all winter.
Oh, man.
Yeah, right. I think it's about the same temperature outside and inside.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I guess most people don't know this, but in China, there's a dividing line. Is it the Yangtze River?
Yeah, yes, it is.
The Yangtze River. So that divides North and South China.
Mm-hmm.
If you're north of that, you get heat.
Yes.
So Beijing has heat.
Beijing has heat. It's much colder.
But...
Oh, I have Chinese friends in Hangzhou. Sometimes for the winter, they go to Beijing because it's more comfortable.
Ah, right. Even though it's a lot colder.
It's colder, of course, but inside it's
you can
warmer.
Escape.
You can escape. Yeah, and then, I don't know, in Hangzhou, there are not so... Like in Japan, for example, let's say you don't have heating, it's cold in your apartment. There are many places you can go. No, like public places, I don't know, like library, like... In China, there are much, much less of these places where you can stay inside, like a public building with heating.
Yeah.
Okay, of course, you can stay in many restaurants, coffee shops, but then you have to pay and then...
Yeah,
so they have very few options. Or you go to the supermarket, what to do? You're not going to stay there
all day.
It's not really a place to sit and read a book. You can do it, but
I remember this episode of this TV show, Married with Children. It was really popular in the 80s and early 90s. It was so hot where they were. It was Chicago. It was so hot, and they didn't have air conditioning. Uh-huh. They just went and lived in the supermarket, freezer section. Stayed there for days.
Yeah, I do it sometimes, go to the supermarket.
Why not?
When it's too cold or too hot.
Or too hot. I've also found like Starbucks.
Uh-huh.
I've never done this, but a lot of Chinese people will go in and not buy anything. They just sit there for like 4 hours.
Oh, sometimes I do that and just buy one muffin sit for hours.
Or McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or just buy like a coffee for $1 and just...
Yeah, and stay there for all the afternoon.
Yeah,
that's possible.
I guess you could do that.
You can do that. Maybe not every day because they know you.
Yeah, they'll know. But for a whole winter, right? Mm-hmm. It's brutal.
Yeah.
I guess if you get far enough south in China, it just doesn't get cold, so you're fine.
I guess so, yes.
But right south of that dividing line, it's mm-hmm. it's cold and maybe you don't have heat.
Yes, it's cold and humid. And... I think a man was from Shanghai, but then he moved to somewhere close to, was it Sichuan? Close to Tibet, anyway, like high up, maybe 3,000 meters, 4,000 meters high. And of course, it was much colder, but dry, very dry climate. So he was saying it was actually more comfortable. As long as you have like good clothes, you don't feel, it's okay, it's better than... Maybe 0 or -5, and dry is better than 5 or 10.
That's true.
And humid, no? Because even if you have good clothes, there's nothing you can really do. You feel cold.
We were in Shangri-La last winter.
Oh.
In Yunnan province.
Oh, in the winter, it must be cold.
Oh, it was brutal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because
so that's like 3,000 meters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or more than that. Yeah, it's 3,200 or...
Yeah, and they didn't have any like central heat at all.
No.
They had
just a stove, maybe.
Just a stove with wood.
So you stay close to the stove.
Yeah, but when we stayed in a hostel, we had a room completely in a different part of the hostel, that completely outside of the stove's range.
Yeah.
And you could just see outside. Like there's no insulation. It's just it's just one wood plank, and then between them, the air just comes right in.
So it's almost freezing inside.
Freezing inside. The only thing that saves you is that they have the electric blankets.
Yes, that's good.
Those work.
Oh, maybe I should buy that for this winter.
Those are really nice.
Yeah. Just sit on it or lie down on it. They must be cheap in China.
They must be. It takes a little while for them to get the bed warm, but it's almost too hot once you climb in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that saves you.
They're really comfortable.
Yeah, but yeah, it's much, much better, no? You just warm the bed, because if you have to warm all the room, it takes a lot of energy.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they are being efficient.
Yeah, somehow, some ways.
Yeah. And I stayed in one place where they had one of those tables where you put your legs under a blanket.
Yes,
those are
nice,
too.
Those are nice.
They were just adding coal, lumps of coal.
This is nice.
Yeah.
Also efficient, no? Like energy-wise.
Right. I don't know how good that is for you to breathe, but...
No, of course. But yeah, that's nice. You just sit there with your legs and under the... It's kind of...
It's a table with a blanket covering it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And people sit around the table, and the inside of it is really toasty warm.
Yeah, it's good.
You almost need shorts to to use it. Yeah, interesting ways people keep warm in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's a luxury, you know, like central heating, to eat a whole house or apartment.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, it takes a lot of energy.
Now that I've lived abroad, I've seen that for sure. Even our first apartment in Beijing, we did not have the radiator heat, but we just had the normal unit, the kongtiao, air conditioning
Yeah,
heating
yes,
unit.
Yes, yes, yes.
So it was really terrible for heating, but there was one in each room, so we could just heat one room, and then the whole rest of the place could be cold.
So just live in one room, yes.
Right, whereas I think even today, most American houses, it's either the house is heated or it's not.
Uh-huh.
And that must just waste a lot of energy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, maybe they're... maybe new houses, maybe they're improving that.
I think probably they are, more insulated or...
Yeah, well, insulation makes such a difference.
Mm-hmm.
They're
building some of these houses like completely insulated, and then you don't even need any heating. I think in Belgium they do some of them. But then also you need some fresh air, some air moving in and out. You cannot completely close.
Right, you don't want to seal yourself in.
No, even if then you don't need any heating system, but then the air becomes bad.
Then you go for a long sleep.
Yeah.
What's Belgium's winter is like?
Maybe similar to Shanghai, Hangzhou. Maybe a bit colder. But of course, like every house is, when you're inside, it's warm and comfortable. Yeah. Yeah, I think a bit colder. Like it snows more often, and sometimes freezes. Like really cold.
Huh.
Sometimes it can be like minus 10 or minus 15, but not for long, for 1 week or so.
Oh, okay.
And not every year.
Okay. Yeah.
But freezing, it freezes like every year, of course. Like in Shanghai and Hangzhou, I don't think so. Just a little bit above zero,
right.
Like the coldest days.
Nah, that's the worst, though. Then you can't enjoy the winter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't really go outside and do summer stuff either.
No. No. Maybe one good way sometimes to go out and walk. Because if you just sit and then you get cold.
Yeah. Yeah, Katie and I got into ice climbing a few years ago at home.
Oh.
Not in China, but...
Ice climbing.
Oh, it's just so fun. Do you do rock climbing at all or ice climbing?
No.
Oh.
Well, I did a little bit of... No, I don't do rock climbing.
Yeah, you
ice climbing, like, so with the kind of like axes.
With axes, right. And you wear crampons on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just go up a vertical sheet of ice. Sometimes it's...
like a waterfall.
Sometimes it's a frozen waterfall.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's just ice water that seeps through rocks.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the waterfalls. There are some places where the whole water comes over the cliff and freezes in a column.
Uh-huh.
So you can go in a circle around it if you want. And you have complete freedom to go wherever you want.
Nice, that's nice.
Unlike rock climbing, you're kind of stuck to wherever the rocks will allow you to use. But ice climbing, it's much more open. And it's good for tall people, too, because you can really reach.
You go faster.
It's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I missed.
Yeah, rock climbing is nice, but I never really did. But a few times I did because I was with some friends who were climbing and they took me. But yeah, it's nice. I mean, you're now always in nice places, beautiful nature.
Yeah, that's
even if you're not climbing and just watching them.
Uh huh. Even then.
Even that is nice.
Right. Even the approach, I like it a lot. Where we used to go climbing, we'd have to walk maybe 20 minutes uphill with all of our climbing gear, like really heavy.
Yeah.
It's just even that's just a good warm up, a good way to be outside.
Yeah.
Nowadays, gym climbing is becoming really popular.
Yes, it is, huh?
Which I used to do a lot, too, but I just viewed it as this preparation.
It's not the same thing.
It's not the same.
Well, it's more like training?
It's almost more looking forward to the weekend when I can get out.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, of course, it's not the same.
Mm. That and climbing mountains, too. It's been a few years since I've done that too.
In the States?
Yeah, in the States. Oh. Well, in South America, I climbed a few. But there's just certain things I had to give up, you know, moving away.
Yes.
What kind of stuff did you do at home?
Well, Belgium, you don't have mountains.
Yeah.
So yeah, you have some place you can do rock climbing. Huh. Yeah, you can do.
Switzerland is not too far.
Yeah, no,
right?
It's not far. You know, people go, like, for example, for skiing, many Belgian people, they go to France mostly. You can go to Germany, to Switzerland, to Italy.
Yeah.
It's not that far. I mean, just driving one day.
Right.
And you're there. Yeah, many people do that. Yeah, in Belgium, you don't really have many. Yeah, it's a small country. Some places are really pretty, but you don't have like impressive like mountains or waterfall or these kind of things. You can do some, I guess you can do some hiking and but for a few days, then you're out of the country.
Right, now you can do a pilgrimage.
You can do.
Walk straight across.
You can go to, some people do, no? To go to Compostela in Spain, this pilgrimage.
Compostela. Oh, I don't know that one.
It's in the northwest of Spain.
Is that the Camino de Santiago?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the same, Santiago de Compostela. And you can start wherever you want. No? I don't know, I didn't do it, so I don't know much, but I know some people start from Paris. You can start from where you live, basically.
Okay.
You can start from Germany, you can start from Belgium if you want to.
Yeah.
But that's a long way.
Start from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That'd be hard.
It'd be hard on the boat. You keep walking on the boat.
Just walk around the boat as it's moving. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Mm.
Or walk over the North Pole.
Yeah.
If it's frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently is not always frozen anymore.
Ah, yeah, that's true. Mm. But.
Interesting. Mm. Have you done any other pilgrimages? Or long walks?
Long walks, yes, like in Nepal, a little bit in India, in the mountains, but not really mountains, it's more like only walking and no climbing involved, but still very nice.
Well, Katie and I want to go to Nepal to do the Annapurna.
Uh-huh.
Is that what you did?
I did it once, yes.
Yeah?
No, it's really nice. Mm. It's beautiful and, it's nothing difficult. Well, I mean, you're walking and then maybe a lot and then it's like a little bit high altitude.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you need to be fit enough. But, I mean, there's no like technical skills. It's not climbing.
Right.
But, I mean, you can also do climbing, no?
Yeah, okay.
But to go to this popular trekking, just walk, and it's not even difficult to find your way. You can take a guide, of course, and porter, but you don't need it. I mean, the it's very obvious which way to go almost always. And these mountains it's not like United States or Europe. There are people living in the mountains.
Sure.
So you can ask people which way to go.
Not always remote.
So it's not dangerous. Maybe in winter, it can be a bit dangerous if you are caught in snowstorm or something, and then you don't see where the path is anymore.
Okay.
So yeah, that can be dangerous, but just like a little bit.
So you don't even need a tent for this?
No.
Oh. I mean, it'll be easy then.
It's accommodation is so cheap. You don't need a tent.
Yeah.
No, you really don't need a tent for these ones. No, Annapurna or some other ones, but then other like. All the tracks, I think you need, and you also need a guide and porter to carry all the cooking gear and then the tents, because it's high mountains, you know, if you don't know the way you get lost, it can be dangerous,
it can be in trouble. So what's the best time of the year to go, do you know?
I think the best time of the year is like October, November.
Not too late. Okay.
And again in the spring, maybe March, April. But then the winter, I like it more in the winter. It's cold.
Yeah.
But there are really very few people walking.
Got it.
Like I went in December, January, February. It's cold, but it's good. Just maybe sometimes you won't be able to cross some passes because it's covered with snow and you don't really you could do it, but you have to know where to go. No, and if it's just recently and you don't see the path,
right? Yeah, I could see that getting dangerous.
But then you can also, let's say you arrive at some point and you want to cross to the other side, and there's a lot of snow. I think most of the time you can ask someone from the village. Like just hire a guide for the day or one day or two just to go to the other side.
Okay.
Safely.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, winter is good. It's cold, but if you have a good sleeping bag, and then anyway you just sleep in lodges, very small guest house. They also have big blankets.
Okay.
I mean, it's cold in the room, and sometimes it's like it's freezing in the room, but...
right, as we've talked about already.
Yeah. If you leave some water in the evening, it's ice in the morning, but...
Wow.
But it's nice. I like it. Yeah, it's nice because there are like very few people walking. But now I don't know. Yes. Maybe I think I've heard like more tourists are coming back after the big earthquake in Nepal.
Right.
I think it affected badly the tourism in Nepal. Also the trekking, even the high season was not that busy. But I think people are starting to come back. Which is good.
Okay. Well, our plan, we don't quite know yet, but we're going to spend January in the Philippines.
Yeah, that's warm.
Where it's warm. And we wanted to go to Myanmar and India and hopefully sneak this Nepal trek in. Well, we've got a young visitor here to the podcast. Young girl, apparently a little bored being the only child on this boat.
Yes.
Running around.
Yeah, she's the only child.
Yeah, she's really curious about us. Anyway, maybe we'll go from India to Nepal and back to India. I don't quite know.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Very easy. You can go by bus.
Yeah.
You can go by plane too.
Oh, this is good. I'm getting excited.
No, Nepal is really nice. It's really beautiful and nice people.
Right.
Very friendly people. Nice. It's nice.
Okay.
Cool. Good place to go.
Yeah. What about India? You travel a lot in India?
India is also nice. Sometimes it's a bit, it's more tiring. More, it's like a bit crowded and dirty and noisy. But it's very interesting too. It's so many things to see and so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting.
I spent a month there once and I really want to go back and spend more time. When Katie and I were thinking about this year of travel that we want to do, my first thought was, let's just spend the whole time in India.
1 year in India?
Yeah, but there's no way she'd be up for that. And even 6 months, I think, is pushing it. So
you can get 10 years, no? Also. visa.
10-year visa?
American, I think so.
I think so.
5 or 10.
I had to get a single entry visa. Mm-hmm. If you're American, you could fly there, and as long as you're staying less than a month, you could just buy a visa at the airport.
Ah, yeah, that's new. Yes. I've heard they want to make it 2 months.
Oh, okay. I was staying a little over a month, so okay. I had to get the visa in advance.
Yes.
For single entry. No, I think it was multiple entry, but they only gave me 6 months. But maybe if you pay more, maybe you can get more time.
6 months is not bad, because I mean, if you're only traveling, and you after 6 months, maybe you want to leave, no? Maybe
probably.
You're tired.
Yeah, that'd be a long time to just spend in India.
But I think I've met some American people traveling, living in India, and they get like 5 or 10 years.
Wow.
Maybe every 6 months they have to go out. Huh?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
But still, it's very good.
Not bad at all. It's different for you?
Yes. I think most Europeans, we get 6 months maximum.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why, but I think Belgians get only 3 months.
Well, you did something to them.
But it depends where you apply for the visa. No? If you apply, maybe if I apply in Belgium, maybe I can get 6 months, I'm not sure. But if I apply from, let's say, Nepal or Thailand, or where, it's only 3 months. Mm. Well, which is okay.
Yeah, I guess I applied in Beijing, so maybe that changes things.
I don't know.
I do remember the application. They asked, they'd say just normal stuff, like, what's your name, what's your passport number? And then they'd say, are you from Pakistan?
Mm.
Like,
do you have any friends in Pakistan?
Yeah, then like a couple more normal questions. Do you have any friends in Pakistan?
Always say no.
Yeah, always
say no. Anything about Pakistan, say no. Do you like Pakistan? No.
Right. It ended up being like 5 questions about Pakistan spread throughout this application.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I think you just don't like Pakistan.
I've been there, but I don't say it.
Ah, right. You have to. There was one question, like, have you ever been to Pakistan?
Maybe, I should know.
Yeah, right. Have you ever been denied an Indian visa because you said you like Pakistan?
No, I don't know. Yes. I applied for the Indian visa from Nepal last year. Uh-huh. Or maybe this beginning of this year. There are so many questions, and most of them it doesn't matter because you have like a form. And there are so many questions. When was the last time you were in India? Which place did you visit?
All right.
Which hotel are you going to stay? And something, and then just...
Difficult. That's right. They wanted me to make up an itinerary.
Difficult to fill that by yourself. But then, of course, you have like just next to the embassy, you have a travel agency doing that for you. And then you see the answers. It's like, where are you going to stay in India? And just write like Delhi Hotel in Delhi.
Yeah.
And then there's the phone number 000000. And there's so many questions, but you don't have to answer.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes it's hard to know what those are, too. We had a couple experiences just coming, just on this trip recently, like to go to Russia, for example. Uh-huh. They asked, do you have health insurance?
Oh, yes.
And I said, well, yes, because I had
of
purchased,
well,
and I really did. I purchased a travel insurance policy. And I went to the embassy and they said, oh, you don't want to put yes here. You need to put no.
Why?
Because if you put yes, then we have to look into it. And we need to verify it.
Okay.
If everything's not exactly perfect, then we'll deny you.
Yeah, because you would think better to answer yes, no?
Yeah, you would think so.
But
so
no.
They said, no, you should put no, and then it doesn't matter. You don't require insurance, for Americans at least.
Yes.
And then coming to China too, they said, you know, what's your occupation?
Uh-huh.
And I'm unemployed, and for now, but I put like my, you know, what I normally would be doing, like software engineer.
Yeah. That's
and
fine.
They said, oh, you don't want to put that. You want to put unemployed.
Okay.
Because if you put your real job, or if you put a job, then you have to prove that you're really working. And
I don't know if it's really a problem, but yeah, you don't want to put, for example, journalist or something like
definitely
that.
No,
definitely
not. No. But if you just put unemployed,
it's
then,
okay, it's
then
fine.
There's nothing to look into.
It's fine.
I would think, oh, well, then they would just tell you that you can't come to China.
You don't have money.
Right, yeah. But no, they're fine with that.
No, it's fine. But for example, for Chinese applying for a visa abroad.
Oh, yeah, much
harder. If you're unemployed, you don't get the visa. No?
Right, yeah.
You cannot put unemployed.
And even if you are.
Even if you are, you don't put unemployed.
It's necessary, but not sufficient to have a job.
Yeah, it's very unfair, no, sometimes. I remember applying for a visa and then... Like for Europeans, Americans, Japanese too, no? They don't ask you anything. Mm-hmm. You can be unemployed, you can be a student, whatever, yeah. You get the visa. But then you are from India. I mean, you can be an Indian, a Chinese businessman, wealthy. Yeah. They will ask you many questions, not to show your bank account. Yeah.
But I think once you show a bank account with enough money in it.
If you're a poor backpacker with $100 in his pockets.
Nah, forget it.
No, they don't ask
you. If you're
European or American. Yeah, of course. No. If you're in India, no, just fine.
There's something that might happen with Americans, though, where we have an agreement with the European Union that any will allow any EU citizens to come to the US without getting a visa.
Yes.
And the EU, I forget which countries it is, but they've recently added a few new countries, and we're still requiring visas for people from those countries. So we're not honoring our agreement with the EU. Mm. So it's possible the EU might make Americans get a visa to come to the EU. Which I think if they actually did that, then we'd immediately say, okay, you can come in without a visa.
Yeah, so it will not get to that.
It would just affect tourism so badly. Mm-hmm. But I read that might happen. Another interesting one this probably is going to happen is a while back, the U.S. passed a law that all the driver's licenses have to be standardized. Uh-huh. And about 5 or 6 states have not done it yet. And so they're not compliant with this new law. And if you're from one of those states, even to fly within the U.S., you're going to need a passport. Which is crazy.
What about the driving license?
Not good enough.
Because when you travel in the U.S., you have to show your driving license?
Normally,
you take a plane, like a domestic flight.
Domestic flight, you just need a driving license.
Or an ID. Or an ID. But you have ID. You have ID. In the United States?
Each state has their own ID system. And it used to be each state could just make up whatever it wanted for their ID. It could look however they wanted.
Yes.
But the federal government now wants it all to look the same.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Correct.
And so not every state has done this. So, so if you're from my neighbor of Minnesota, then, for example, starting January 1st, you're going to
get...
Oh, we got our friend is still here. Really curious, plain doctor, maybe?
No. She knows.
So if you're, if you're from Minnesota, January 1st, you're going to need a passport just to fly to Los Angeles.
That's strange.
And I guess if anything, more Americans will get passports then.
Yes. Yeah, because few Americans have to have.
Huh? Yeah, most
only if you travel abroad. Well, right. We are the same in Europe, no? We don't need passport to travel.
Yeah.
Within Europe, and even within.
No.
Turkey or.
We're.
Even to go to Turkey, I think maybe some. I don't know exactly. Maybe Algeria, Morocco, Tunisia. Maybe you don't need just ID, so it's okay.
Oh, okay.
But if you go further, then of course you need.
That
you need
nice.
A passport.
Until recently, you didn't need, for Americans, we didn't need a passport for Canada or for Mexico.
Yes. But now you do need
it. Now you need it. Or I think it's if you drive there, you can get a passport card, which is not, it's not a full passport, but it looks like the size of a driver's license.
Yes.
And that works. But if you fly in, I think you need a full passport.
Passport.
Which, when I first went to Mexico, I just brought my driver's license or a birth certificate, even.
Yes, it was
good enough. So now we can't go quite as far. So I think that's a big reason why a lot of Americans never got a passport, because you can travel all of North America without a passport.
Yes. It's big, yeah?
Very big area. Our young friend is extremely curious about our podcasting equipment.
The microphone. And
she's listening to the headphones.
Yes.
Maybe playing doctor a little bit, like it's a stethoscope.
Nani kore?
Anyhow, I guess since we've got a new friend here, maybe we should wrap this up and...
As you want.
Yeah? Okay. Got a full day at sea here, so
yes, two full days, huh?
Right, basically 2 whole days. And
yes, huh? Or yeah, like almost 48 hours, huh?
Just about 2 nights. Lots of time to reflect on our trips, which we've been doing.
It's nice, huh?
Yeah,
I like it.
It's
to take the boat.
I like it a lot too. Yeah, that's the lesson of the day. Take the boat. You have time to think about what you've
yes,
been up
yeah.
to.
Yes, to change country, no? Also,
yeah, because you take a transition.
You take a plane too fast, almost. No, you just
it's shocking.
It's almost instant, no?
Uh huh. And it's, yeah,
I mean,
it's,
from Japan to China, it's not, but like, let's say you go from the States to China, it's like,
yeah, just you jump on the plane. And 14 hours later, you're in China.
Yeah, totally different place.
And it's a completely different place.
Mm.
And it is a little bit shocking on your system.
Yes, of course, of course.
Physically, mentally.
So yeah, so it's nice, no? Overland or
slow
or by
transition.
Boat.
But if you're gonna go really far, I would recommend going west. Because we've been going east
yes.
since Finland, uh-huh. all over land or over
yes.
sea.
Yeah.
And we keep losing hours.
Oh, okay, yes.
So
you have time.
Yeah, we lose time. Now we're going to gain an hour going back to China.
1 hour.
Yeah, this day will last 25 hours instead mm-hmm. of 24. So that's
yes.
that's helpful.
Uh-huh.
All right, Philippe. Well, it's been great
yeah.
talking to you.
Mm,
let's
thank you.
Let's wrap this up and start to... and return this young girl to her mom, maybe. All right, so I'm going to try to do this in one take. I'm still walking around Fuzhou near my hotel. There's just a lot of stuff happening here. It's a small city, and sometimes in China, the small cities are the loudest. It's just always construction noise, always people out dancing, there's markets, and every single person I pass turns and stares at me. I am definitely a celebrity here. I bet the last foreigner to walk through here was months ago. Months. A lot of these people have never seen a foreigner. But yeah, I like it. It's exciting. All right, so let's talk about Japan. I'm going to catch you up from the last time that Katie and I did a podcast until now. We were in that really cool free campground. That was awesome. The next day, we biked down to, I can't even remember the name of the city now, but it was a small town on the coast, and we found a park to camp in. And this park was great because, well, there was plenty of room for tents. It was quiet enough. There were places for cooking. But most importantly, there was a 7-Eleven really close. And we could go there and charge up our phones, charge up our iPads, have a cup of coffee, and sit in the public area. So we did that for a couple hours, and that really made our stay memorable. It's the little things, you know? Sometimes in travel, especially with these bike tours, these small things like finding an outlet to charge your stuff can make or break your experience. All right, so the next day, we were gonna meet up with Miyamoto. Remember the guy who makes masks out of wood? He told us that to meet him in Kitakyushu. He gave us his phone number and he made a hand-drawn map for us saying meet us here. But we didn't know exactly which day we'd make it to his hometown because, well, we were on bikes, we didn't know how long it would take. So we just gave him an approximation, like a 3-day range. All right, and that's all we had. He doesn't use the internet, so we couldn't Facebook message him or anything like that. And he couldn't call us because we didn't have phone numbers in Japan. So this actually seemed a little bit unlikely that we were actually gonna meet up with him. So we weren't really sure what was gonna happen. We called him using Skype a couple times, no voicemail, nothing. So couldn't even leave a message for him. I tried texting him with Skype, but I don't know if he actually got it. Saying, here's where we're gonna be there tomorrow. Who knows? So we went into this day with low expectations. We biked out to near his where we were supposed to meet him. I'm passing by a train right now. That's interesting. I didn't even know there were train tracks here. Woo, those brakes are squeaky. Okay, there we go, now it's stopped. So we biked near Miyamoto's hometown of Kitakyushu, and we wanted to get him a gift. Now, we didn't want to get him anything like really expensive because, well, who knows? We didn't even know if we'd meet him for sure. But we couldn't get him something really cheap either because, well, that'd be just really cheap of us. So we decided on a medium-priced bottle of sake. And that way, we wouldn't waste too much money if we didn't meet up with him. And we could just drink it.
Okay, so that sounded like a good gift. We continued into his hometown. We made it all the way to the ocean. And so this town that we were biking through is the furthest, southernmost, I guess you could say, town in Honshu, the main island of Japan. And Kyushu is the next island, and it's right next to Honshu. So there's a bridge connecting the two. And so we were biking toward this bridge connecting the islands. The bridge was like 100 feet above the water, really high up so the ships could go under it. And only cars were going over it. And then we got down to beneath the bridge, and we saw a sign that said elevator. And then it hit both of us what was going on. We remembered Miyamoto saying elevator to us. He wanted to meet us by an elevator, and this was an elevator. This must be the place he wanted to meet us, but on the other side of the channel. So we paid 20 cents each for our bicycles, and we took our bikes onto the elevator, and we went down, 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 several floors down. And then it turned out there was this tunnel that you could walk through that had been built in the 1950s, and it went underneath the ocean. And we could hear cars right above us. So there was another tunnel above us with car traffic. So the highest thing was the bridge, then you had air, then you had the ocean. Underneath the ocean, there was probably a bunch of rock. Underneath that, there was this bridge, there was this tunnel for cars. And underneath that as well, there was a walking tunnel. This was amazing, 800 meters long. So we walked our bikes across this tunnel, went up another elevator, and then we were in Kyushu, the last big island in Japan. Awesome. And then we figured out this was exactly where Miyamoto wanted to meet us. It made perfect sense now. So we called him again. He said a bunch of stuff in Japanese that we didn't understand. And then he just said, wait, 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 wait. And so we waited. And about 20 minutes later, a car rolled up, and there he was, Miyamoto, in the flesh. We did it. We met up with him. And so we took down our bikes, we folded them up, loaded them into his car, got in, and we drove away. And this is the first car we had been in all of Japan, in almost a month of, at this point, of biking in Japan. First time being in a car. So that was exciting, driving on the left, you know, driver's side's on the right. So we went to his house. Well, let's just say this, long story short, Miyamoto drank a lot. And he made me drink with him. I was still okay though. I was, you know, a little tipsy, but nothing too serious. Miyamoto could barely stand. And I don't think his wife appreciated that. Oh yeah, we got to meet his wife. He was really generous to us though. He got us a whole meal. He gave us a place to stay. The thing is, though, we thought we were going to stay there for a couple days and maybe go to a party or something. We couldn't quite tell from the translator, but it turned out he just wanted us to drink with him. Not to disparage the guy. The guy was awesome. He was super generous. It's just, it wasn't quite as fantastic of a meeting as the first time was. But he had a lot more masks at this house, too, and that was cool. We got to see all of his masks. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. The next morning, he put us on a train. And this was the first train we had ridden in Japan, too. That was cool. It was really nice, very fast, a little expensive. But the thing is, we would have to go probably like 2 to 3 days on the bicycles to get to this next town, final town on Kyushu that we're going to see, called Beppu. Oh yeah, on the way, on the train, I looked up, just for whatever reason. Wow, this is another train, very loud. In addition to the trains, and the traffic, there's a lot of people walking through here. And every time someone sees me, they turn toward me because I'm just talking to myself while walking, speaking in English. And they're like, whoa, hey, what? So it's really interesting. And I purposely picked this part of the city because it was much, much quieter than the main area that we were in before. So, okay, I think it's quiet now. Where was I? Oh yeah, I was on the train to Beppu. I looked up out the window, and there was this big hill in the distance. And on top of the hill like the Hollywood sign, the iconic sign, it said USA. And I was like, USA? Like, this is the USA? Wait, what? And then Katie said, oh, I know what this is. I remember reading about this place. There's a town called Usa, spelled USA, in Japan. And a long time ago, when manufacturing was still stigmatized in Japan, a lot of the local companies incorporated in Usa so they could put on their products that they were made in USA. It makes perfect sense, right? So then we got to Beppu after a few hours on the train. Beppu is famous for its hot springs and its geothermal activity. So this started out as a big disappointment because there are these big pools that are called hells. I didn't even realize this. I thought you went and swam in them. But no, they're like 180 degrees Fahrenheit, way too hot to swim in. So you just go and look at them. And you have to pay money to go look at them. And the first one we went to, it was really small, and there was not really even a park around it. It was just this tiny thing. So it wasn't that expensive, but the gift shop was bigger than the hell. And there's like four or five of these hells. So if you go to each one, you have to pay individually. It really adds up. So that, I don't know, that kind of sucked. Well, we got totally redeemed though, because way above the city, we got the GPS coordinates for this hot spring that you could swim in or bathe in, as they do. And well, we biked way, way uphill. It took forever to get up there, but it was totally worth it because we were in the wilderness, just outside. No city life visible at all. And there was this hot spring stream coming down from the mountains. And they had diverted the stream into two little pools. And this is all done by volunteers. It's all free. And someone even cemented in bricks and stuff and rocks to make it look natural. And you sit there and you just relax in this really hot water. It smells like sulfur, of course, but so good. I just walked out of there after like an hour feeling like I was walking on clouds. All of the soreness from biking just went away. It was amazing. And that made the trip to Beppu totally worth it. Katie even said this is one of her favorite things she's ever done while traveling is go to this hot spring. That's how good it was for us. All right, so after Beppu, we only had a few days left in our trip. So we wanted to get back to Osaka. And we could have biked all the way back or taken a train. Biking would have taken, well, it took us like 3 weeks to get that far. It would have taken us, even if we went straight instead of taking all these detours, a couple weeks to get back. So we decided to take a ferry, an overnight ferry. The ferry was supposed to charge about $20 per bicycle. In addition to the fee to get on the ferry, which is pretty high to begin with, $20 extra per bike to ride on. And so we packed the bikes in our bags. And you know what? No one said a word to us. No extra fees. As long as they were in bags, it was free. Same with the train. So if you want to take your bicycle in Japan on public transport, just put it in a bag and no one will say anything. No extra fees. One thing did happen though. They had these really narrow escalators and Katie was taking her bike on one shoulder in the bag, really heavy bike, and then two panniers in her hand, got on the escalator, and one of the panniers got stuck between the handrail for the escalator and the glass that was next to it. The whole handrail just stopped. It was jammed, but the stairs were still going. And she just continued up the escalator after getting her arm out of the bag loop. And I ran up, tried to yank the thing out while the escalator was moving and like while simultaneously walking down the stairs that were moving up, wasn't working. So finally, like a couple employees ran over, they shut the whole escalator down. They started yanking the bag. It was just jammed next to glass. I was sure the glass was just gonna shatter. all over the place. So Katie opened the bag, started just taking individual things out one by one. Well, she figured out it was the pots, our cooking pots, were what was jammed. They're metal pots. And one funny thing is she said to me, "Oh, Dan, it's my pot. My pot is jammed." I'm like, "Oh, someone might take that wrong. We're in Japan. I don't know what they think about that." But nothing bad happened. So eventually they got the pot out. We went on our way. Well, later, the next time we were trying to cook, we figured out there was this giant dent in our pot. So now it looks pretty pathetic. We might be able to get a hammer and hammer it out and fix it, but who knows. The ferry itself was really nice, very luxurious. There was plenty of space for our bikes. If it were full, it would have been hard to put the bikes on it, but since it was nowhere near full, it was no problem. So the next morning, we arrived in Osaka, back where we started our trip, and now we had a couple extra days. So first thing we did was biked out of the city and to this little town called Asuka. And this town had some temples in it. It just really cool little place. We also went to some hot springs there, camped in a park. Really excited for the next morning where we were going to go to Nara, the old capital. But the next morning, it was pouring rain. That's no good. So we waited out the rain in a shelter for a while. Not really sure what to do. We were thinking about getting a hotel or something. And we ended up waiting until about noon and the rain stopped. We decided to go for it. We had this campground in mind that we wanted to go to. So we biked it really quick out to this campground, which was way on top of a giant hill. And we made it before the rain started again. Well, I don't know how much detail I want to get into here. It might not be that interesting, but the campground, this is the one campground that just sucked. And it sucked because we couldn't even sit down and cook our food. And all we wanted was just to be in peace. And people kept coming up to us and wanting money for sitting at a table. I'm like, we didn't know what was going on. And this campground was empty. So it's not like we were taking someone's table from them. But the big thing that really upset me more than, I mean, Katie had other things, but for me, the worst part was this. We got there, our tent was soaking wet because it had been raining the previous day. It was cloudy out, the air was very humid. We didn't want to sleep in a wet tent. So I thought, okay, we had about an hour of daylight left. Let's just try to get this tent dry a little bit, do it our best. So we set up the tent without the fly. And then we took the fly and looked for somewhere to hang it. And there were clotheslines. Like, actually, they're poles, but same thing. Outside of this campground, there were like 9 poles, completely empty, all of them empty. So we hung the fly on top of one of the poles, came back like half an hour later, just hoping it had gotten a little drier. We didn't know it could have started raining at any moment, so we wanted to get the fly back on. Well, these two women who were working there came up and just started yelling at us. And like in Japanese, we don't know Japanese. We're just like, look, I'm sorry. I don't understand. But it was obvious what was going on. They didn't want us to hang our fly on their poles. Well, they went in and told on us. They got their boss, and the boss came out and yelled at us and said, "No. You cannot hang your tent's fly on our hanging poles." And like, if they needed them, that would be fine. But they were all empty. We wanted to use one pole, and there were 9 poles. All of them were empty. I went out the next day and looked, still empty. They had no even reason to use them. Obviously, so they had a little hotel there. They had to dry the sheets and stuff, the linens. Okay, that makes perfect sense, but they weren't even using them. And it's just one of those things where Japan can become very frustrating at times because of the rigidity of the people. For the most part, Japan is amazing. We loved it. But sometimes just people they have this narrow path that you must go down. You may not veer off the path. And even if it makes sense that you're veering off the path, we're going to make sure you stay on the path. Just because we're that structured of a society. And we as foreigners don't always understand this. And anyway, it causes some little problems here and there. Let's just move on. All right, so we took down camp. One last big stop anyway, that was Kyoto. Now, Kyoto is a beautiful city at any time. It's got all these old temples. It's a real cultural center of Japan. This time of year, it's got one more thing going for it, the fall colors. There's these maple trees, and they turn red, and they turn purple, and really bright colors. It's amazing. I've never seen trees like this. And I'm from Wisconsin, where we have beautiful fall colors, but Japan's really, really beautiful. So people come from all over Japan to Kyoto this time of year to see the fall colors, all over the world, really. So Kyoto was packed. Still, we had a great time. We walked through a few of these temples, these parks, saw the trees, saw the leaves, greatly enjoyed ourselves. We hung out with some friends who took us out for sushi. We ate all kinds of good food, had great conversations. And we had a couple of days where we just more or less relaxed, but took in this big city. We hadn't been to really many big cities in Japan. So that was great. Okay, so on the way back to Osaka, we just had to chill out for a bit because we had been moving every single day, more or less. We only took 2 days off from biking in all of Japan. And for a month, out of a month, we only took 2 days off. And so one of those 2 days was our second last day. So we stopped at this house in between Osaka and Kyoto and just chilled out for a day. And then we biked back to Kyoto. We went out for dinner with Yasu, our couchsurfing host from our first couple nights in Japan. Passing by some more construction now. I'm gonna go the other way. This is getting loud. So we went out for one last good dinner of meat on a stick. I forget what they even call it, the meat on a stick. Very delicious, but tiny portion sizes. I mean, man, you cannot get full off of this food if you have even a normal appetite. They just don't feed you much. So obviously you can buy more, but the prices are designed for you to buy only a certain amount. And I would go broke if I actually got full at one of these places. Anyway, next day we biked out of Kyoto and hopped on the same ferry that we had taken to the city. We went past the same 7-Eleven that we had gone in on our way in. We shed a few tears over the last 7-Eleven we would see in Japan. One of our favorite things about Japan, 7-Eleven, yes. Got on this ferry. When we got on the ferry, for the very first time, someone gave us shit about our bikes. So we were checking in the bikes, and this guy was like, no, $20 extra for the bikes. Oh, I think we talked about this during the podcast. So I'm just repeating myself. Okay, I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to make any edits here. Sorry about that. I just don't have time. I've got a busy life. So we got on this ferry. I met Philippe. I met River, another cool guy. And we had 2 full days on the ferry. Got back to Shanghai. It's so cool going into Shanghai because there's so much boat traffic on the river. It looks like something out of Star Wars, seeing all the starship fleets going by. Unbelievable how many boats are going into Shanghai. You gotta just see this. It's just crazy. So we got there back in China. Stayed one night in Shanghai. We got ate a lot of dumplings, soup dumplings, specialty of Shanghai. Then we took a train overnight, ended up in Fuzhou, where we are now. And that's it for us. We're leaving mainland China in the morning, hopefully. Gonna catch a ferry to a small Taiwanese-controlled island, then another ferry to the main part of Taiwan, and continue biking for probably 3 or 4 more weeks through Taiwan, and then we're gonna go to the Philippines for Christmas. That's all. You're caught up. Okay, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate you listening to me ramble. If anyone still is with me, thank you. And as usual, catch you next week.